people from the Sanos Planet Foundation and Sanos Planet community. I welcome you all to this podcast today. And like you see, I have another beautiful woman today. We need woman power, a lot of woman power. Sophie Coley is my guest of today. Hey, Sophie, it's amazing that you have time and that you're here to get interviewed from me about your amazing work. And I will soon explain what you're doing. But first of all, hello, welcome.
Hi, Maggie. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited. Thank you.
You're very welcome. For everyone to know, Sophie is a human rights observer for about 3 months for Peace Watch Switzerland. And today she will explain us a little bit about it. And as you can remember, we had already one interview some weeks ago with Heidi. And this was about Peace Watch Switzerland too. But there it was more about the direction in Honduras, about the things that are happening there, because Heidi was in Honduras as a volunteer. And Sophie will tell us a little bit about her work, what she has seen, what she has witnessed in another place of this world. But I let you tell me about this, Sophie. First of all, Sophie, can you tell me a little bit about yourself? How did you end up here in our podcast that you can speak about Peace Watch? How did you get to know about Peace Watch? How did that work? How did this start for you?
Thank you, Maggie, for the introduction. I think it was by chance that I started working as a human rights observer with Peace Watch Switzerland, and that I was on the field for 3 months in Israel and Palestine. For me, I think I was at a bit of a crossroads professionally. I had been working as an attorney for a couple of years, and I felt like I needed to, I guess, broaden my horizon, see a bit more of, I shouldn't say the real world, but what the situation was like in other countries. In Switzerland, obviously we have questions about human rights, we have issues there, institutionalized problems, there are problems amongst private citizens. But then I was also very interested to witness what these human rights issues could be like abroad, especially in sensitive areas. And so I had been working as an attorney, and I just wanted to broaden, as I mentioned, my horizon, learn was very important for me, to be able to understand that the world I live in is quite a privileged world, and I wanted to understand how others may live on a day-to-day basis. And I started searching for programs specifically about human rights, because it's also my professional background. So that's what interested me specifically. And when it came to choosing this program with Peace Watch Switzerland, I saw that they're a very serious NGO. They've been working for many, many years in the field, training human rights observers, and then sending them to mostly Latin America, at the moment Honduras, and that they also had a program in Israel and Palestine. They send human observers there for a specific program I'll maybe mention later as well. Mm-hmm. And I had been interested in the situation, the conflict in that area for a while as well. So it was an opportunity for me to go for 3 months there, get the training here in Switzerland, and then work as a human rights observer in Israel and Palestine, and join what is called EAPPI. So it's an ecumenical accompaniment program in Palestine and Israel, which was set up in 2002 by the World Council of Churches. And it was created based on a letter and a call from local churches and leaders to create, invite an international presence in that area to witness, document the issues faced by threatened communities in that area, and to show solidarity, protective presence, and strengthen also local initiatives to defend and respect human rights.
Mm-hmm. Well, you explained quite good, and there popped up already many questions right now. The first, let's go a little bit back. You said that did you grow up in Switzerland? Because you speak a very, very good English, like not really Swiss slang.
No, so, yeah.
Say. Are you from Switzerland?
I am from Switzerland. I have a family from abroad who grew up abroad in the United States, in England. My mom traveled a lot when she was younger, and they always spoke English at home with her sisters, her parents. So that's why I may not speak English like a Swiss person, but I am Swiss.
Yeah.
And I did grow up here in Switzerland, yes.
Yeah, that's very, very hearable that it's not typical Swiss English. I know. Well, as you said, but you grew up in Switzerland, and
yes.
You said about the privileged world you grew up in. I feel that so many times too, like sometimes I ask the question, does it only depend on where we are born? I mean, you know, the rights we have in this world, we are humans. It doesn't matter where we come from. We are all humans. We should all have the same rights, but it's not like that.
Yes.
If you look out in the world, it's completely messy, I have to say. Like, this is really coming from me. It's messy. Some people have no rights at all. I am grown up here in South Tyrol. I have pretty much all rights I need, and I can really go for everything I want to. Even just my passport can let me in wherever I want. It's like, it's insane. How do you look at this? Because sometimes it's just it's quite an unfair world in this case.
Oh.
And especially if you see how many people don't have at least not even 2% of the rights we do. How do you see this, or how does this feel for you?
Yeah, I agree with you completely. We are so used to having our basic human rights respected or enforced that sometimes we don't realize that people live in a completely different environment, in a completely different world. On paper, as you mentioned, we're all humans. We all have the same basic human rights, and we do have these international conventions, we have these international NGOs or organizations that are meant to enforce, protect human rights. But I just think that in mostly areas of conflict, especially, politics gets involved. It's about power. It's another, I would say, ugly aspects of humans. It's these notions of power. It's not caring to some extent for those that are the perpetrators. I think that they have other goals, and the idea of human rights for everyone is a beautiful idea, but I just think that for some, it doesn't even enter the equation, because for political reasons, for maybe sometimes financial reasons, there are so many motivations that can push people not to respect other people's human rights. And one of the main issues is, even though we have these human rights that are meant to be universal, they're meant to be respected by all, that we have these international conventions which are meant to guarantee these rights, there are very few mechanisms to actually enforce, respect, compliance with these human rights, especially if the violations come from, to some extent, the state. Like states, this national, I'm not sure how to put it in English, but yeah, the government itself. So I mean, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you think when you have been trained in Switzerland, right,
mm-hmm.
to go to Palestina and Israel? Have you been in both places, Palestina and Israel, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So the work of the program was mostly focused in Palestine. Mm-hmm. I myself was stationed in East Jerusalem,
mm-hmm.
and other volunteers were stationed in other areas of the West Bank. So our work focuses mostly in Palestine,
mm-hmm.
but I did go to both areas, Israel and Palestine.
And did you feel, when you had the training in Switzerland, did you feel this training was preparing you for what you have seen then in the end, or for what you have witnessed, or for what you have observed there? Mm-hmm. Or did you then in the end have the real training when you have been there to see really how it then really is? Because like we live in Switzerland and Italy, and we talk mm-hmm. about other areas. I mean, of course, you have been trained by people who have been there already. But still, it's a different environment, right? And when you go to the place, then it's completely different sometimes than we think. I just know that because of my actions as an activist, mm-hmm. I got prepared for ocean conservation. I knew what I'm putting myself into. I knew that I can see whalers and that it can be brutal and violent when I try to save whales. But then when I was there, it was a different situation. Mm-hmm. Did you face something like this that you felt when you have been there, wow, this is quite bigger, or it's not that hard that I thought, or how did that feel for you?
Yes, to some extent it was harder, quite a lot harder than I had expected. We were very well trained here in Switzerland, and we're lucky to have previous human rights observers talk to us, explain to us what the situation was like, what we would witness there, and how give us tips on how to deal with this such situations. And when I arrived in Palestine, we also were trained there for a week before going out onto the field for our different tasks. Mm-hmm. So we were also very well trained there, but it was still difficult to really understand what the situation was like before actually starting the work. You can tell someone what it's like, and you can try to internalize it as much as you can, try to understand as much as you want, but it's very different hearing words, reading documents, and then being confronted to the humans, to the people that are going through these situations. And it makes it much more personal. It's much more impactful because you're not only reading on a piece of paper that a family had its house demolished, for example. Once you're there, you see the family, you see the children, you see the hopelessness, and you see what the impact of these human rights violation is. So it makes it much more difficult to process, and it is much more, it's two different worlds, I would say. The preparation was very good, but once you're there, you realize truly what it means. And then again, you realize, but then you're still, you can go home. I went home after these 3 months. I'm back home in Switzerland, in my privileged life. I just have to worry most of the time about small daily issues, problems, whereas over there in these areas in Palestine, they're still suffering, they're still facing human rights violations, recurring human rights violations. So even though you realize what it's like over there, you always have this knowledge that you're going to go back home. And so it's very different as well in that sense, I would say.
Yeah, I understand that fully. How would you describe the human rights situation in Palestine and Israel? I mean, as far as you can tell us, what are the biggest issues, or what are the biggest human rights violations you witnessed?
Mm-hmm. So I cannot speak, I would say, in general for Palestine, because I was stationed in East Jerusalem, and our role was as human rights observers to witness and report these violations in that specific areas. Other teams took care of other areas in the West Bank. So our role was not only to witness and report human rights violations, but we also had a role to accompany local communities, human rights organizations, and individuals, Palestinians, and also Israelis, in supporting their work for peace, for peace, for human rights. We would also provide protective presence, hoping that an international presence would help de-escalate or reduce or even prevent threats of violence and threats to human rights and show solidarity. So I do want to mention that my role there during those 3 months was not only about monitoring and reporting human rights violation, but there were multiple tasks throughout those 3 months that did not always involve specifically human rights violations and reporting them. Mm-hmm. So what I witnessed there in terms of human rights violations, it was, I feel like there were so many of them, and that it was systematic coming from Switzerland, seeing the challenges faced by the local populations and communities, children being checked multiple times on their way to school, being confronted and sometimes harassed verbally or sometimes physically by Israeli security forces, border police. You would witness at checkpoints between East Jerusalem and the West Bank, Palestinians trying to enter East Jerusalem to go to work, who had their permits, but who were turned down, turned away, and who had to go simply back home, and who then could not provide for their families and support them financially. We also witnessed house demolitions on multiple occasions, where either Israeli security forces would come with a bulldozer and demolish the home, or you would have Palestinians, to avoid high fees, demolish the homes themselves, and be confronted to families with children, underage children, very often young children, with nowhere left to go. So overall, I would say the human rights violations were really on a wide range of specific human rights, whether it was access to education, access to sufficient housing, access to livelihood. So, and they would often have or manifest themselves under different forms. So I think that the overall feeling I got when I was there is that there were high threats to Palestinians' human rights, high threats, and that there was very little they could do to defend themselves appropriately against these human rights, whether on the legal front or in any other way to help draw awareness to the situation. So I would say that overall, it was a feeling of, yeah, just feeling that there was like so much that they had to face, and that they had to, so much effort, so much energy to just simply try and live basic lives, to just simply get food on the table, to get their children to go to school, to have a roof over their heads, to be able to go to work, things we take for granted. It was a daily challenge for some communities, some individuals I felt over there. So it was realization to how much of a challenge and their lives could be, and how much these international conventions that are meant to protect human rights, that are meant to make states comply with these human rights and at least provide decent protection for those rights are just sometimes, unfortunately, it felt like it was just like writing on some piece of paper, but that it held no weight, that it meant, I won't say nothing, but almost nothing, because it's important to continue the work and to fight for those human rights. Mm-hmm. But in certain situations, it did feel like the way to defend these human rights was just not there. There was very little that could be done to enforce these rights, which does not mean, obviously, that fighting for respect of human rights has to stop. On the contrary, it's so
I think I know very much what you mean, because I think that to change a system, it has to be in the system be changed. Like if you come from outside, it's you can help so maybe give some tools or structures or support, but the change itself has to come from inside. I think that's always like that. It's even when I talk about animal rights. I, for example, live vegan because of animal rights, but also because of human rights. It's all connected. And if I talk about it, many people first think, oh, these animal cuddlers, hippies. But no, I mean, it has so much more. It's not just about helping the animals and saving the one animal that I don't eat today. It's so much more. So we have to understand the background. And then people have to start standing up themselves. That creates the change. I cannot change someone, but I can give an input to them to explain why I do what I do and why I do things different. And then people can think about it and maybe take this seed and let it grow. And then it can change. So people, even I think it's maybe a completely different topic, but in the end, it's the same thing. What I think it's about human rights too. You can go somewhere, help people, support them, be there, see them, listen to them and show respect also. But then they have to take the seeds from you if they want to use them to grow something different. That has to come from themselves. I think that's why it sometimes takes so much time as well to see the change that we want to see so much faster, I think. Mm-hmm. Hey, do you want to share a story that was very touching for you, what we witnessed? Can be a beautiful story, can be a hard story, whatever you want to share. Was there something that you still keep in your heart, what you bring home and what you so many times maybe even think about that was touching for you?
There were many. I think maybe one of the sadder stories related to this this work we had, or our task, that was to monitor the streets children would take to go to school in the old city of Jerusalem. And many of these young boys, in this case for this school, would come from outside the old city and would have to simply just walk through the old city to go to their school. And our role was to just walk along these streets and observe and make sure that these young boys could go to school. And very often we were just confronted with young boys, teenagers, just simply on their way to school, being stopped, checked, sometimes body checked, having their school bags opened, their things just thrown on the ground by Israeli border police officers, being confronted in very aggressive ways, like verbally just, and having these officers just like centimeters away from the children's faces in full gear with their weapons, with their full gear, which is also, they had like batons, helmets, and surrounding these boys. And it was shocking the first few times I'd witnessed this, so it didn't always happen, but there were, I think, over the months I've seen it on multiple occasions. And just realizing that from the moment you grow up until you become an adult, you already, in this case for these young boys, because that's what I witnessed, they find themselves confronted to this violent expression of state power, force, repression, where you are shown that you're nothing almost, or that we can be aggressive with you. We can shout in your face. We can empty your bag, throw the things on the ground. We can be very aggressive and you can't do anything about it. It's just seeing that from a young age, they were in these positions of being so vulnerable and not being able to do anything about it. They had no remedies, no legal remedies, nothing they could do. And if they showed any sign of trying to answer back or just, like, you know, try to keep some distance, it was immediately interpreted as a potential violence. So to say, it was always interpreted against this, even this young boy, this young Palestinian child. So it was realizing that from an early age that they would be made to understand that they have no power, they can't do anything about their situation, and that the, specifically in this case, the Israeli border police officers can do what they want without consequences. That's what it felt like. So I would say that that was one of the tasks we had in the East Jerusalem placement that really impacted me, because these kids were just trying to go to school. They were just trying to go to school, and they were, their way to school was already a very tough road, difficult mentally, physically road to take just to get into class in the hope to learn and to get an education. So that was, that I would say was one of the, day tasks that impacted me the most. Mm-hmm. And maybe a more, on a more positive aspect, I think one thing that I also take away from this whole experience in Israel and Palestine is the kindness of the Palestinian community I met, the families, the individuals, the people, despite their circumstances, despite the how difficult their daily lives are, despite how challenging their life is, they were amongst the most welcoming, kind, generous, and nice people I have ever met. And I was, in a sense, no one to them. I was just over there, a foreigner from a privileged background here. I was there for only 3 months. And they were so welcoming and kind. And that's something that really stayed with me. It's how their kindness, their generosity, that was, despite everything, despite this environment, that's really something that struck me. I'm not sure how they do it to show such humanity and kindness to foreigners, people they don't know, in view of what's, in view of what they go through. That's something that's,
That's a beautiful example. Well, thank you for sharing this. I have seen as an activist, for example, also in China, when it's about human, about animal rights. In my case, it's much more about animal rights in the last years. So I see there's a lot of animal rights violations, like a lot. But they are also here in my country. But in China, I see many more. And at the same time, I know that in China, there are some of the most amazing activists I know. And I sometimes feel like in the place where it's like really hard, some really good comes out and activists really start to be there and to really stand up. And I think that people who are standing up where it's really hard to stand up, for me, they are like so much more powerful activists than me here in my privileged world standing up for something. Nothing happens to me if I stand up. Huh? I mean, maybe someone screams at me who doesn't like what I say or do, whatever, that can happen, but that's not a big thing. In other places, you might be just shot. Did you see something like that, some strong activists, even in Palestine, in Israel, that really stood up for, that were like really standing up and standing out and showing that this is not okay, what is happening, that are really like,
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are so many local initiatives to defend human rights and to better the condition of Palestinians in Israel and the West Bank. And there are so many individuals I can think of now specifically that showed such bravery, such courage, such determination in fighting for their cause, whether it be this specific legal organization that would fight for the rights of Palestinians, or, for example, other activists who would simply now waving the Palestinian flag is a huge issue and you can get arrested for it. But they showed such defiance as well in showing that they were there to fight for their cause, who knew what could be done to them, who knew that they could be arrested, harassed, that knew that their physical integrity could be violated, but who just stood tall and proud and who just had this one message, like, we are defending our human rights, we are holding this line, this is where we stand, and who would do so despite the risk, despite the threats. And I understand completely what you mean when we are here advocating in favor of these communities for the respect of their human rights. There isn't that much that can as such happen to us, but over there, they're risking their lives sometimes to convey this message, to fight for peace, to fight for human rights. And they're so, I mean, I don't know what adjective to use, but these are just amazing people, beacons of light within their communities. And they're so inspiring and amazing. Yeah.
Amazing. Really beautiful. Hey, I have two more questions. We are more or less at the end of the podcast. Two more questions for you. What would you say to the people who would say, I hear that many times, what do you say to the people who say, but this situation there, it's so far away, it has nothing to do with me, it's not my fault, what's happening there, I can't do anything about it anyway, blah, blah, all of that stuff. What would be your answer to the people saying this?
I think that if the human rights of some individuals or communities are threatened or violated anywhere in the world and we do nothing about it, then we are letting fellow humans down as well. I think it's our responsibility to also advocate and fight for the respect of human rights everywhere. And I think that we're all potentially face these violations. We don't know in 10, 20, 30 years what may happen to us. And I think it's important that we show solidarity. What impacts another can impact us. And as humans, it's our responsibility to make sure to make our voices heard, that violating the rights of others just like us is not something we tolerate, because this passivity, this lack of even not necessarily acting but speaking in defense of these rights is dangerous, and it can absolutely lead to even more violations everywhere. And thinking that we will never be the victims of human rights violations, I think is a grave mistake. I think it's being naive. And I think that there has to be more solidarity. And if I may say, in the case of Palestinians in Israel, I think that we've recently seen that a great shows of solidarity amongst people from different nations is possible in other contexts, other wars. And I feel like we've forgotten about Palestinians because I don't know why, because of maybe the conflict has been going on for so long that we here have lost maybe interest, or we don't feel concerned. But I think it's important, especially in these recent times, to go back, understand what's happening there, understand historically, politically, what the situation is, and without trying to give an opinion on the political situation, to just try and show solidarity with other human beings whose human rights are being violated, without necessarily entering the political debate. That's not the point. It's about basic human rights and their respect. So I would say that's something I wish for people to learn more about, and just be able to express more of this solidarity and message that their human rights matter.
That sounds amazing. And I think you answered already my last question like this, because my last question was, what do you really want to share still today with the community? And your last sentence was quite good. Do you have one, two more sentences, what you really want to give our community on the way?
I think that, the people listening to your podcast are already very much aware of the situation of human rights and other basic rights in general, when it comes to the environment you mentioned, or animals. But I think it needs to be much more a topic amongst society, human rights and their violations and what we can do about it, even when it's abroad, even when it's far away, and to kind of remove ourselves from this comfortable life we sometimes have. And of course we have obligations towards, you know, professional obligations, our families, our friends, we are busy people as well, but just maybe set aside some time to make these vital questions more of societal issue, and encourage people to be more active on the human rights scene, and be more active, I would say, members of this worldwide society of humanity in general.
That's an amazing ending of this podcast today. I thank you so, so much, Sophie, for your time and for everything you do and you stand for. And I think that the Sanos Planet community, everybody who's listening today, they can take a lot from this as well with them. So please, guys, take it. Listen to these things, check it out, the situations, talk about it with your friends, with your families. That's so important. Don't leave it here in the podcast, listen to the podcast and then leave the topic behind again. Take it into your daily life, to talk about it with your friends, with your families, with everyone you can, because I think that starts then the conversations that bring change. Thank you so much for your time, Sophie, today. We will definitely, again, like last time with Heidi, we will definitely put again the link to Peace Watch Switzerland in the show notes. So check that out, click on it, and there you will find as well ways how you can help and support. And I wish you an amazing time. Thank you, Sophie, and all the very best.
Thank you so much, Maggie. Thank you for this conversation. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak about this cause that's close to my heart. So thank you for your time and for everything you do. Thank you so much.
Bye. Bye, guys.
Bye.